to tonight's Monroe City Council meeting. This is the regular business meeting for June 20th, 2017. The time right now is 7:01 p.m. Ms. Atkinson, will you please call the roll?
Certainly. Council members present and establishing a quorum are Scarborough, Cutaback, Hansford, Rasmussen, Davis, and Gamble.
Thank you. And I received word earlier this evening that Councilmember Camp would not be here this evening, so without objection, we'll consider his absence as excused. Councilmember Gamble, will you please lead us in the pledge?
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America, and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you. So I hate to do this with everybody that's here, but we do have a need for an executive session. We will need to stay in this room for that executive session. The executive session has been added to the agenda. Is there any objection to having added that to the agenda?
No.
Seeing none. The purpose of this is to evaluate the qualifications of an applicant for public employment pursuant to RCW 42.30.110, subsection G. The agenda does say 15 minutes. We're going to start out with approximately 5 minutes, and we'll extend as necessary. So with that said, I'm really sorry. We're going to have to ask everybody to leave the room for approximately 5 minutes or longer. Thank you. There will be action to follow. Okay, we're back in session. Thank you, everybody, for your patience in stepping out for the executive session. So we are now going to move on to announcements and presentations. We are on announcements and presentations. Item number one, this is AB 17096, confirmation of city administrator, appointment and authorized mayor to sign city administrator services contract. Council members, I am very pleased to present to you tonight Deborah Knight. Deborah, why don't you come on up? Deborah Knight has applied for the position of city administrator. She has interviewed with our department directors and with me. She comes to us with 23 years of experience. She's worked for the city of Woodinville, approximately 6 years with the city of Sultan, and approximately 6 years with the city of Stanwood. So she offers 12 years of experience here in Snohomish County, and approximately six of that is here in the Sky Valley. She has very strong experience in economic development, city administration, very strong background in finance. I feel that she's going to do very well, subject to your confirmation, of course, for the city of Monroe. Ms. Knight has also been a resident here in Monroe, living here for I think about a dozen years, and so she's very familiar with our community. She also has been very active in the places that she's worked, not just coming to work in City Hall, but also being active in different community organizations and community groups. She's also known for being very proactive in representing mayors and councils on the regional and state levels and county level, and it is my deepest, sincere privilege to offer Ms. Knight's appointment for your consideration for confirmation this evening. Ms. Knight, would you like to say a few words?
I just want to thank everybody this evening for the opportunity to serve the community of Monroe. I mentioned earlier this evening that it had been one of my dreams when I was working for the city of Woodinville and actually commuting between Monroe and Woodinville to come to work for the city. So it's a real opportunity for me, and I want to thank the mayor and the council and community for supporting me in this position.
Thank you. So we've got a couple lights. Councilmember Gamble.
So first off, I'm very excited too that we're being presented with Deb today. I'm going to call you Deb. I can't call
Deb's
you Deb.
Fine.
I've known Deb for about 10 years in both a professional capacity when she was a city administrator in Sultan, and professional dealings, and was thoroughly impressed. And then also in as the mayor pointed out, I'm very active in community groups. We've served on a personnel board together in the city of Snohomish at the First Presbyterian Church there for quite a few years together, and she was always fantastic. fantastic at giving counsel, not only to the employees of the church or the pastors of the church, but then also to me and to other members of the elders and members of the precept board. So I'm really excited that her name came in. She interviewed, and we have the opportunity to do this today. So I'm going to move to confirm the appointment of Ms. Deborah J. Knight as city administrator and authorize the mayor to sign the city administrator services contract with Ms. Knight and expressly authorize further minor revisions as deemed necessary or appropriate.
So I would like to respectfully request that we modify the motion, that it is Deborah L. Knight. There was a mistake in the what was drafted there. So Deborah L. Knight.
Deborah L. Knight.
Thank you.
There we go.
All right, and I have a second from Council Member Cutaback. So, thank you both very much. Council Member Pinkford.
Thank you. Thank you for being here tonight. I told you before the meeting that I always ask if anyone can speak up for the person that the mayor brings forth. And Councilman Gamble has done so. Trust his judgment, his opinion. Respect that a lot. So I'm voting in favor and look forward to listening.
Thank you.
Thank you. Councilmember Cutaback.
I just wanted to add, I got to know Ms. Knight this past summer, or last fall, I guess, at Stanwood when we were opening a new Y. She's very active in the Stanwood community, and this weekend when it was known that she had applied for this position, I got a few emails and a couple of texts saying, congratulations, you've got someone who would be really great for the city of Monroe, so I will also be voting for it. Thank you.
Thank you. All right, there aren't any other lights. Mr. Mosley, do you have anything to add?
No, Mayor.
Okay. All right. With that said, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed? Any abstentions? Motion passes 6-0. Congratulations.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, Council. And we're going to talk just very briefly about next steps, because I know we've got some people that are interested in that. This night will begin on August 14th. And there will be a swearing in at the first council meeting. She'll sign the oath of office when she starts, just like we all did, but the ceremonial swearing in will be at that first city council meeting. And I think that's it. So thank you again, and pre-welcome.
Thank you.
All right, we're going to go ahead and move on to the next item on the agenda. This is announcements and presentations. This is number two, presentation for Downtown Monroe Association from Ms. Worthen.
Thank you. Good evening. It's been 3 months since we started, since I started, and I'm wondering now if it's hard to believe that it's already been 3 months, and on the other hand, it's hard to believe that I've only been involved in Downtown Monroe Association for just 3 months. It's just been an amazing experience. I can't tell you how many times the words perfect timing have fallen into place, starting with the first day that I was here, which happened to be a community meeting night, and the guest speaker was the director for the Washington State Main Street program. And so my introduction was actually the introduction of the community, and so I got the best overview I could have had, as bonus was being able to meet all of the community members who was there and some of the council people. And then the next day was the board meeting for the Downtown Rural Association. So we really had a great start. As you can see in the packet that I gave you, it's just sort of bullet points of some of the highlights that have happened in the last 3 months. And the first few weeks were really, you know, housekeeping and putting together the office, the computer, the files, the business card, all of those details, and really getting out and getting to meet all the businesses. And one of the perfect timing events was the lighting they had done downtown, so I was able to go and get a survey of what the businesses preferred, and that worked out beautifully, and then shortly after that, the lights came out, and the feedback has been amazing. Really enjoying that. That's been great. And then along the same lines, the sign issues started to be raised with and being able to meet Gabby and Amy and working with Ben, and I have a monthly meeting with Ben, which has been, you know, just just great information and idea sharing. But the sign issue came up, and with that, we got the offer from Northwest Signs that they were going to donate a sign of $10,000 to one of the businesses. And just this week, they make an announcement that Sherina Bean is going to be the recipient of that award. And so, yeah, it's going to be, it's perfect, really, you know, the location, the storefront, and everything else. So it's going to be a shining example of some, you know, pretty great signage. So as we kind of went through the months, another opportune thing came up with that they had the state conference for Main Street. And so we were able to go to Ellensburg with the executive board and get just a ton of information, got great tours. We had 21 classes that we attended, 22 classes and two tours and 25 pages of handwritten notes and just some great conversations between all of the people who were there, and of course us, and since then some of the other board members in the community, and the follow-up has been just, I felt really blessed to be able to get to attend that. Another fun thing was we put together a basket and we collected from just the downtown businesses, and we got this huge basket and we barely had to try. I mean, we really had, one, the generosity of the businesses, but just the amount of Made in Monroe items was very impressive. Very impressive. So once we got through into May, a little bit of familiarity, got past a lot of the tasks and started working on some of the projects that we've been interested in. That is a partnership drive. But we're trying to get people involved so that we have a volunteer pool, that we have more people on our boards and committees, and so that we have that connection with the people that use downtown. It's not just the people in the downtown promenade area. We want everybody who uses downtown or has a love of downtown, which I certainly have gone from a crush to an obsession in the last 3 months. So we're going to be doing some mailings and some press releases on that to try and get more people involved. Last night we had a community meeting and we actually used just post-it notes and Sharpies and let everybody write their ideas, and so we've got a whole stack of them that we'll be doing a follow-up report on, but it was just amazing some of the ideas and some of the like-mindedness of people in downtown, and then some of the great ideas that come from that. We're also working in partnership with the Chamber on some projects and also the LTAC, and Becky has been a great help with that. I love that she came in and actually had a meeting with Diane and I and explained why they didn't receive it this year, but then also to be successful next year. So instead of just getting a letter that says sorry, she did just an amazing job of explaining all of the requirements and what we can do to, you know, to be successful this coming year. So one of the other things that we've been working on, just on the sidelines, is trying to encourage some of the walking downtown. When I talked to the artist, Kevin Patel, who did the Wagner Swifts, and we talked about taking some of these little Swifts and putting about 20, 25 of them in places mounted around town for people to walk and find them as a way to get them down Lewis and to some of the other places. And also just sort of it's a good healthy activity, it's a fun thing, and it's so identifiable with Monroe because of, you know, the natural attraction of the Swifts. And so he was actually able to give me a price, and so we'll have something formal written up shortly, but right around $50 for these, and then we can get them engraved so we can actually sell them as a fundraiser to fund this project. So, and then last, just another recent piece of news is that we did hear from the Main Street America, and we were recognized as a Main Street affiliate nationally, and so we do have that email and press release.
Council members, any questions or comments? Council member Gamble.
Oh, just a comment. Just a comment. That, I mean, it's looking fantastic down there. I mean, I see now that the cafe down there is open, serving dinner as well. seeing dining out on the sidewalks, people walking around, and it's just the lights of the evening, and it looks good. Lots of nice new paint jobs.
It is, and it just keeps, you know, every time you go down there, somebody's got a new sign, somebody's done a new window display. I mean, they're really doing some great marketing, window marketing. The shops have been wonderful with that, and, you know, just the last 3 months, the amount of foot traffic down there has been immeasurable.
Oh, it's been great, and I love the idea of the Swift deal, because my son and I will run, we'll jog downtown, and we'll go look at the statue. He's gotten it, we'll go look at the statue, he wants to read the plaque, so he would love a game of Find the Swift.
I love that. Find the Swift.
Councilmember Cutback.
Just appreciation for all the volunteers that are involved in this. And you know, a lot of you have been doing a lot of work over the last couple of years, really getting to this point. So very much appreciated. And I agree with Councilmember Gamble. Things are looking really great down there. It's busier. How are the sidewalks? I mean, because that was kind of a big project. Now has it been two years? So things, I mean, is it positive, totally positive now with the widening? Are you still?
But I still heard some comments, because when I went through and did the survey for the lighting, I also had introduced myself, which, like I said, perfect timing, and asked them to tell me, you know, to be sure to contact me if they had any questions, concerns, or ideas. And it did come up in a couple places. I don't think quite as much as when it originally came up. But I also think people are seeing the value of the outdoor dining and all of that. So I think that will probably temper itself as things improve down there as far as the foot traffic and the actual businesses that we're getting. And some of our events that we're getting planned.
Yeah. Well, thank you. And thanks for being so positive and collaborative down there. That's made a big difference.
Thank you. Councilmember Scarborough.
Thank you.
Ditto what the chief had to say. And,
I'm sorry.
Ditto what Ms. Cutback has said. And thank you for all the work. Are there any particular businesses that are you butting heads with about the sidewalk trees?
No. There's a couple comments, but I also have a little bit of hearing issues. So.
I don't have mine.
I don't think there's anybody that's outright opposed to anything. They just made a comment or two when we were doing the survey. Thank you.
And to the DMA folks, and both Councilmember Camp and I were both there last night, and also we had one of our planning commissioners, Commissioner Rousey, there last night. There were a lot of people at the meeting sharing their thoughts and their hopes and their vision for the downtown, and there's been a lot of investment, and it centers a lot around that volunteer team of people that have helped pull that together, and we've come a long way since just a couple of years ago, and I really appreciate the work that you and the DMA folks have been doing to help revitalize the downtown. And, you know, from our hearts, thank you.
Thank you.
Okay, the next item we have on our agenda is item number 3 under announcements and presentations. This is a proclamation for Amateur Radio Week 2017. And I will go ahead and read this in. Proclamation Amateur Radio Week. Whereas amateur radio operators are celebrating over a century of the miracle of the human voice broadcast over the airwaves, and whereas amateur radio operators serve as bridges between people, communities, and countries, and whereas amateur radio operators have volunteered countless hours of community service during times of calm and in times of emergency, and whereas these same individuals have further demonstrated their value in public assistance by providing free radio communications for local parades, triathlons, and other events, and whereas the City of Monroe values the services that amateur radio operators deliver to emergency response organizations, including the Monroe Emergency Management Office, and whereas beginning June 24th, 2017, a 24-hour amateur radio field day will take place to demonstrate radio amateur operator skills and readiness to deliver self-supporting communication without further infrastructure being required. Now, therefore, I, Jeffrey Thomas, do hereby proclaim June 19th through June 25th, 2017, as Amateur Radio Week in Monroe, and encourage residents and businesses to join me in thanking our amateur radio operators for their service. And we have David here to receive this proclamation. David, would you like to say a few words?
Yes, I proudly accept this proclamation on behalf of the amateur radio community. And as mentioned, the Sky Valley Amateur Radio Club will be set up this coming Saturday from about 11 to 5 p.m. in the Sky Commerce Park. Come by and see us. Cabana number 2.
Thank you very much.
Okay, thank you.
The camera's supposed to look at the cameras. Okay, we're good. All right, the next item on the agenda is comments from citizens. This is a time set aside for the members of the audience to speak to the City Council on any issue related to the City of Monroe, except any quasi-judicial matter that is subject to a public hearing. We do have a sign-in sheet. Has anybody signed in? Okay, is there any member of the audience who would like to come forward to speak to the City Council this evening? Okay, anybody else? All right, seeing none, go ahead and move on to the consent agenda. Councilmember Hanford.
Move to approve the consent agenda as listed.
Second. Okay, a motion to approve the consent agenda from Councilmember Hanford, a second from Councilmember Rasmussen. Any discussion on the motion? Seeing none, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed, motion passes 6-0. Ms. Atkinson, will you please read in item number 5, the ordinance?
I will, as soon as the internet decides that I can see the title. And thank you, Pam. Well, that's not working, so I will go to my backup plan.
You broke the internet?
Okay.
Ordinance number 0114, 2017 was approved through the consent agenda vote. This ordinance amends Chapter 20.12 MMC, Transportation Impact Fees, updating the city's codified transportation impact fee schedule pursuant to MMC 20.12.130, providing for severability and establishing an effective date. Thank you.
Thank you very much. We're going to go ahead and move on to new business item number 1. This is AB 17-100. Authorized Mayor to sign Civic Plus website redesign sales from contract. Mr. Worthman.
Good evening, Mayor, Council. While the projector warms up here, I'll start. Last year when I came to you with the IT budget, I talked about going forward with updating our current website. Our current website doesn't offer a mobile app. It doesn't offer a mobile, whether you're on a desktop, it's the same experience. It's not the same experience on a desktop that you get on a mobile. So one of the things we wanted to look at this year is trying to have both a desktop app and, you know, a mobile platform. So that is what we are here to talk about tonight. So, back in 2011, our initial cost for our Civic Plus website was $19,935. Our annual cost to support is now up to about $3,800, and that gets us really good customer service. I know that it's not down that often, and when we do have issues or we just frankly can't remember something because we don't do it that often, we get them pretty much all the time, minimal wait time. Brad and I have been there on their phone a few times, and I don't think we've had to wait more than a few minutes. So overall, our customer service internally is really good. So how did we do last year? We had 206,000 visits, 10,000 searches. People are on there about 2.5 minutes. They looked at about 462,000 pages, and they're doing about 2.8 actions per visit. Now, some of that number is inflated because because everyone that uses a computer at City Hall, their homepage is the City of Monroe's page. But there are people that are going beyond that because they're doing other things, so they're just landing on the homepage and then going somewhere else. So it's used. It's pretty traffic-free, which is great. So if you look at 2015 to 2016, we're up about 6,000, almost 7,000. And here's what they're looking at. They're looking at our newsflash. They're looking at government. They're looking at facilities, utility billing, police department, and staff directory, how to contact people. Top searches.
Ms. Worthen, just a second. I'm
yeah,
sorry.
Okay.
I was missing.
So,
Councilmember Scarborough or Hanford, which one?
You can go back.
I can wait.
Okay, okay. Councilmember Scarborough.
You said you're... when you
let me go
said you were up to your annual service of 3,800, what was it when you started?
It was about, I think it was about 3,000, and there was a 5% increase every year, year over year.
And we would expect something like that?
In the current contract, that's correct.
Thank you.
Yes.
We'll just go through the lights. Councilmember Hanford?
Well, since we're stopped, can you go back?
Absolutely.
I know this is one. You said that the homepage is set up on City Hall computers. Mm-hmm. Is there a way to break that out?
If I know what's coming outside of our IP address?
Correct.
I don't know the answer to that.
Okay.
I'm not sure.
Because that to me, that would be helpful.
Okay.
For, if not now, but for the future.
For the future.
Because when you think about 100 some employees multiple times per year,
sure,
possibly that's going to add up in a hurry, and that could be the majority. So.
Sure.
Thank you. Councilmember Gamble.
So mine's in someone that, but I guess Councilmember Hunter, when you were asking, was that on the page views you were asking?
Yeah, because he said every time someone here opens up the web browser, it opens up to probably total visits, that would count as total mm-hmm. visits?
Yeah.
Okay, because my question was in that regard. I mean, I can see you have the unique page views.
Sure.
So that would be where it's tracking off a MAC address and then saying, hey, it's, you know, this particular MAC address opened up
right.
and these unique page views. Doesn't double count when it goes back and opens a different one.
Right.
So that's the differentiating between total page views and unique. Do you have the same thing for the total visits? Do we have unique visits?
No.
Okay. Because that would really get
what you're asking for.
Yeah,
what
you're asking for. They probably have it.
Yeah,
I'm sure they do because they, you know, they're tracking the page views. It's not going to influence me one
sure.
way or another on this, but I do think it would be good data for us to know to really understand how many people are actually using our
right.
Actually, how many devices, really?
Devices.
How many devices are actually, unique devices are using it?
Okay.
And they should be also able to tell us whether or not that device is a mobile device or not.
Right. That I can get back to you. Actually.
Okay, cool.
That's good. So, no problem.
Thank you. Councilmember Cutback.
So, what does this mean? Like, is this good? Or is it, how does it compare? Like, what?
Comparatively?
What are our goals? Like, what kind of reach do we want to have? Do we set those, or?
We can certainly, I mean, that's really, what do you want our mobile presence or online presence to be? You know, from my perspective, I want our customers to be able to find ourselves quicker, and that's one of the things I don't think we're getting today. When we go in, even when I use it, I have to go government, you know, down to city council, then down to agendas. It'd be nice if, you know, the stuff that we're looking at, that our citizens are looking at, can get to that information quicker. That's what I hope to get out of this, is being able not to have to drill down so far, and also with everyone using their smartphones to look up stuff, I want them to be able to have a good experience online and on their phones, and they're not getting that today because we don't have a mobile friendly site. So those are the kinds of goals that I've established.
That you've established.
Yeah.
Okay. I would just be curious to know, like, you know, is this our comparatively good?
Comparatively good.
Because this company does a lot of.
They do a lot of them. Absolutely.
So they would know kind of what.
Yeah, and I think we're right in the ballpark. Pam, you talk to Civic Plus a lot. I, defer to
yeah,
you.
And Canton McGamble, I will definitely find that out. I will talk to our representative to see if we can differentiate between those two as well, see how many actual people www.wa.gov. And then we are pretty comparative as well to that. Basically, it is very cumbersome and technologically outdated, our website, so we definitely want to mainstream our website to other cities around us. But yeah, I mean, it's pretty comparative to other cities around us in terms of searches and global information and those kinds of items.
Thank you. Anything further, Councilmember Kovac? Councilmember Gamble?
Yeah, I remember that. As soon as I asked you on the mobile device, I thought I remember seeing it in the presentation. It is in there. It's on 8 of 22. Really, if we take that and break it out for the unique visits, because it just didn't, you don't, you know, and it's just more for, you know, the knowledge on what the true growth is of, you know, individuals that we're touching, or that, how that's growing year over year. Otherwise, all the information is there.
Thank you. Please continue.
Thank you. So with this, you know, we've got a lot of people looking at our newsflash, which is great. That gets back to what do we want to do online. We want to get our information out to our citizens any way we can. We do it through Facebook, we do it through our website, etc. A lot of people going to pay their bills online, which we certainly appreciate. And what are they looking for when they come online? They're looking for to pay bills, they're looking for jobs, they're looking for employment. That's actually, she would say, comprehensive plan. And zoning maps. So they're looking to, you know, find jobs, look, get passports, which we've seen that increase where you do pretty well at issuing passports out. And this goes back into why I would want a standalone mobile site. You know, 42% of your traffic comes from mobile device. I would say if you, most people probably abandon our site if they looked at it on their mobile device because it's not mobile friendly. We'll get to what it looks like later in the slide, in the slides. But really, there's, when we started this in 2011, there wasn't as big of a need. Now, you know, 6 years later, there's a huge need to have a mobile site as well. So here it is. It's the, you know, this is kind of what we as the staff will do. You know, we can change, add, or remove main navigation pages, which has, is better than it used to be without the need for Civic Plus design time. Some of the stuff we used to have to send to them and they would have to change the front page. We're going to be able to do that ourselves now. And we'll be able to drag and drop easier. So getting stuff online will be easier and more efficient. So, and these are a couple of the examples of what their newer models, their Aurora design is. Okay, another thing that we're looking at is the request tracker. Currently we have a system that we use internally for if you need, you know, to reset your password on your computer or you need, you know, something from facilities. This will actually do all of that internally and also have a presence for if there's a pothole, if there's graffiti, if, you know, there's anything that needs to be done externally, our citizens can come in and basically file a ticket online and we can track that. And it can be GPS located, it can be color coded, and we can close that out and have a record of, hey, we had a pothole here, it was reported at 9:59, by 11 o'clock it was fixed. So that will help with claims and liability and also just general customer service. Okay, so again, this is more back-end support stuff, new user interface, live chat with our support team. We can work directly with our account manager. By all accounts, since I've been here, and I use Civic Plus not only for the website, but for our applicant tracking system, and it's great. I've never had a service level issue. They're always quick to respond, and they usually have an answer for whatever's going wrong, or I can't remember. So version 4 is on the left. So if you pull up your smartphones now, this is what our website looks like on a mobile device. So it's not great. It's clunky. It's hard to work through. If this were me, I would just abandon the site and come, you know, wait till later. I wouldn't dig around on it. That's just me. And on the right, it would be our new one. You know, say City of Monroe, obviously, and there'll be more. You know, whatever we decide to put on the front there, whatever we. declared as important. It will be easily found. It's just more smooth. It's set up for mobile devices. Project timeline, 6 to 8 months from start to completion, five-phase process from beginning to end. There, it's not a refresh of our site. They look at it as basically a whole new site. They go through and make sure any dead links or anything that we haven't used in a long time, they'll get rid of, and then we'll migrate all of the good data over that we're still using today. So here's what we're paying today. Our current request tracker system, ComCate, is costing about $5,000. Civic Plus is costing $3,800 annually, so $9,404. And the new Civic Plus mobile app with the request tracker with website annual fee is $10,500. So we're really not paying that much more. And from my perspective, I think we're getting a lot more robust request tracking system. And down, if you look down above the total duo pound signing, that's $24,593. The actual one-time fee is $18,253, so that's what we're going to pay. And that is already in my budget for 2017. I put away plenty to cover that.
Councilmember Hanford?
I thought it was done. If you're not done, that's fine.
I'm almost done. So if you want to look at other clients that are on the Aurora from Civic Plus, this is it. You know, Snohomish County, Whatcom County, Puyallup, Pierce County, so, and then some other, and Spokane County, and some Frisco, Texas, Fayetteville, Arkansas, et cetera. So certainly check those out. Questions?
Councilmember Hanford.
Thank you. Looks great. I remember when we rolled out the first website.
Yeah.
So this is a great improvement. I move to authorize the mayor to sign the Civic Plus website redesign, sales form contract, and expressly authorize any further minor revisions deemed necessary or appropriate.
Second. Yeah, first from Councilmember Hanford, second from Councilmember Rasmussen for the motion as identified in Bill Number 17-100. Any discussion on the motion? Seeing. Councilmember Gamble.
No, I'm assuming, but it's optimized for both iOS and for Android, correct?
Correct.
Yes, just want to make sure.
Fair enough.
Okay, getting ready to vote. Any other discussion? Seeing none, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed, motion passes 6-0. Thank you.
Thank
you. Next item on the agenda is business item number 2. This is AB 17-101, ordinance number 015-2017, approving Worthington Heights rezone for first reading. Ms. Restall.
Good evening, Mayor Thomas and the City Council members and Jana Resto, staff members. And for your consideration tonight, we have the first reading of Ordinance 15-2017 for a proposed rezone of the Worthington Heights project site, which you can see up here. This is the double as a vicinity map and a zoning map. And on, on March 7, 2017, the applicant, Carol Harder, submitted an application for a 100-lot preliminary plat in PRD. And this is to be located on the site that you see above, which is approximately 19.3 acres in area. An associated rezone was filed with the plat, and the application requests to change the zoning of this area from UR9600 to R4. And that would allow for an increase in density from 3.63 units per acre to 4 units per acre. Regarding the review process, the decision authority, you can see bottom left-hand corner, the decision authority for the preliminary plat and PRD is actually the hearing examiner. The rezone, however, the recommending authority would be the Planning Commission, with the final decision being the purview of the City Council. Of course, one of the first things you do when you look for a rezone is to see if it's consistent with the comprehensive plan. And the comprehensive plan designation for this entire area, actually, as you can see, all of the yellow is in it, It is low-density single-family residential, and according to the comp plan, that would imply a gross density of 3 to 5 units per acre. The project proposes an overall density of 5.18 units per acre. According to the code, that's rounded down to 5, so the proposed zoning is consistent with the comp plan designation. And just to provide a quick summary of the actual impacts of the rezone, the benefits. According to the existing, or under the existing zoning, the UR9600, the applicant can get 70 base units. Since the PRD is proposed, they get a 30% density bonus on top of that, allowing for a total of 91 units. With the proposed zoning of R4, the base units goes up to 77, and you can get 100 units with the density bonus. So what this means on the ground is that the rezone would allow a net increase of 9 lots in the plat. So this evening it's requested that the council take the action that you have on the front page of your agenda bill and accept as the first reading ordinance 15-2017. The final reading is currently scheduled for June 27th, and I would be happy to answer any questions that you might have right now.
Thank you. Councilmember Scarborough.
I always say the reason to go from 3.4 to 4 per acre is money. So the increase is only a net of, what did you say, 10 lots, 9 lots?
No.
And I don't see, should I see, parks and or those sorts of things?
I think
Zach's going to chime in.
Council, if I might, this proposal before you tonight actually concerns only the rezone itself. The underlying preliminary plat and planned residential development are being addressed by the hearing examiner. The council should confine its review to the criteria for rezone approval and not the specific development proposal that is pending before the examiner.
Thank you. Anything further, Councilmember Scarborough?
No.
Okay. And forgive me, will you be able to read the next?
Yes. Anything else, sir?
I just wanted to point out that the Planning Commission has recommended approval. You have the draft findings in your packet. You will get the signed findings next week. A public hearing was held on June 12th. And within those findings, there are the rezone criteria that we do have are in there, as well as an analysis of how the project meets those.
And Ms. Bristol, he's going to go ahead and read off for disclosure, and then we'll go back to questions. Thank you.
Council, as you're aware from previous proceedings of this type, approval of a site-specific rezone is considered quasi-judicial under state law, and for that reason, the appearance of fairness doctrine applies. At the request of the administration, I'm going to proceed with a very truncated, shortened version of the standard appearance of fairness disclosure process. I will assume that unless a council member indicates an affirmative response, that your response is negative, then there is no issue. As the council is aware, the appearance of fairness doctrine requires that quasi-judicial proceedings be fair in both appearance and fact, and for that reason, the council should consider the following issues. First, does any council member have a financial interest in the project or underlying property? Does any council member have a family member who is a party of record? Does any council member have a personal or familial employment or other business relationship with a party of record? Does any council member own property within 500 feet of the project site? Yes, sir?
I don't know. I don't know the distance. See your map out there. If you go back, I don't know the distance from
here.
You got a laser?
Does it work?
Look at that. So from here to property I own is right there. Pretty substantial field across here. I know that this would absolutely would be. I don't know.
Okay. If I could ask a clarifying question of staff. Is the property that Councilmember Gamble indicated by virtue of his pointer within the mailing radius for the rezone that was sent out to neighbors?
It was not, actually. So the parcels you see to the south are actually the the distance is greater than 500 feet.
Thank you for that clarification. I don't believe it's a problem.
So the mailer I got was for the one that's on the other side, the proposal on the other side?
Likely for Raspberry Hill, or occasionally we increase the radius just to provide additional public information, or information to the public.
With that clarification, I don't believe there's a basis for recusal.
Okay.
Finally, is any council member aware of any other personal interest or involvement with the project, the parties of record, or the property that should be fairly disclosed? Now, please let the record show that the only response was council member Gamble's, and that it was deemed legally insufficient to warrant recusal. A second series of questions deals with the question of impartiality. Is any council member aware of any personal bias for or against any party of record or for or against the project? Has any council member prejudged any of the issues? Has any council member not reviewed the record materials for the proposal? Is any council member aware of any other reason why he or she would not be able to perform his or her duties in an objective, impartial, and fair manner? Again, the record indicates all negative responses. The final question has to do with ex parte communications, and that is, have any council members had ex parte contacts regarding this project while the proposal has been pending before the council? If so, they should be disclosed for the record. And there are also no affirmative responses for that point. The record should also indicate that any party wishing to challenge any council members on appearance of fairness of grounds should do so now. Failure to raise a challenge to that effect when the basis for challenge is known conclusively waives the challenge going forward.
Are there any challenges?
None. Thank you, Mr. Mayor.
Thank you. Ms. Ristall has given a presentation. Does anybody have any other questions, comments, or motion? Councilmember Hanford.
Thank you. Thank you for your presentation. Just a couple questions for clarification. So it looks like in reading the packet, all the public hearings that have been held, there's been no comments.
That is, well, we did receive standard letters from DSC and Mercer County PUD, but there have not been any comments on the reason from any residents or other parties for the city.
Okay. And then I'm assuming that the guidelines that we have in place will stop any building that would block the views from the homes directly on that north of there. Is that correct? I mean, it's a pretty steep slope, so I think that it's not a concern, but I just, I know people that live up there, and I want to know the answer when they ask me if the homes are going to block their views. So.
So the only thing that we really have regulating views would be the maximum height of the structures. However, the good news is the applicant, if I can go back to the plat map, the applicant is providing tract C. That is where that tract is basically one big steep slope. And they're not going to be doing any construction in that area, so it will be preserved.
Okay, great. And I'm glad you went to that, because that's my last question. We're not modifying the widths of the roads for any of these roads, correct?
I think Zach is...
Is that part of our plan?
Council, secondly, those are questions that concern the actual development proposal.
Okay.
I think it would be appropriate to ask staff questions concerning how this proposed rezone meets the city's criteria for rezoning property, for making that plat, that map amendment to the city's zoning map. But the specific questions regarding the development, I don't believe are appropriate.
Okay. So then I won't say any more, except this looks like it fits within our plan. But going forward, I just want to make sure we don't make any more narrow streets. Thank you.
That's what I'm starting
with. I'm with Councilman Hanford. I'm concerned with the density because we need to make 9 more lots so we can make a little more money. Getting closer together, taller, and more congested, narrowing the streets is a concern. So the overall, go back to your other map. The overall density up there, we're already building a bunch in here. Now we're going to build a bunch up there. We haven't completed 191st to get egress out of the area. So I would personally want to study it a little more before I vote to approve it myself.
Anything further? All right, Councilmember Gamble.
My question is, from a growth plan perspective, where are we from a housing perspective on units?
Are you talking overall? Yeah. Over, so by 2035, we should be at roughly 22,000.
22,000.
Right. And right now we're at,
last time we talked, we were operating with a shortage of homes, correct?
Correct.
So
right. That's what, in the comp plan right now, it shows us at a deficit.
Yeah, so that's what I'm asking. I didn't ask the question. Right? On the comp plan, what's the deficit we're currently operating under?
It's set approximately because they include both in-city limits and UGA area.
Correct.
And so the total is roughly 250. You take out that UGA area, we're at like 700 and something.
In deficit?
Yeah, in a deficit. So one thing, but one note on that too, is during our major code update that we're going through, part of that is developing a new zoning map. And so as we go through that process of creating a new zoning map and looking at that, as Shanna stated, the between three to five units per acre is a low density, and once we land on the 4 units per acre, 5 units per acre, we'll be checking that map back to our growth targets too, so we can hit that 2035 mark.
Correct.
And so we'll be honing in on that also.
But this helps us with that. I mean, it's only 9, but it helps with that. I just wanted to make sure that we covered that point, that it's not just the, you know, we have targets as a city as we look at the growth plan and making sure that we have, so this is one of those areas that we can do that. So it can, yes, it will benefit, you know, the contract, but it also benefits the city as we try to shore up that gap.
Thank you.
Thanks.
Thank you. Councilmember Hanford.
Thank you. Just one more question. And I don't know if this, turning around, if this falls within the guidelines, but where does the size of the homes that are going to be placed on these lots get determined? At what point is that?
That's appropriate. That's simply a general question about the city's development regulations and how it would be affected by this rezone. I think it's appropriate for staff to answer.
Okay. Of course, the size of the homes is contingent basically on the setbacks, the allowed lot coverage, and allowed height. So that is partially determined at the time of the plat, because the applicant is, especially with PRDs, they're determining what size the lots are going to be, and there's a certain variety of lot sizes that have to be provided. So when you're looking at just a strict lot area, you take the setbacks out and you look at lot coverage, you have a better idea of what the building envelope could be, and then looking at the overall height, you know, if you just create a box, it will give you, because we don't, within the city, have a maximum number of floor area or anything like that. So the other bulk requirements control.
I wonder, as we've talked about affordable housing and things like that, I just wonder if there's, where in our conversation is affordable housing and building homes that are not just the biggest that you can get on the lot to get the most money possible, and then continually driving home prices out of range, and repeating the cycle. And so we've talked about this before, but, and I'm not against this, it's concerning to me that we need to keep this on the table, and I don't know the best form for that. I don't know the best way to make that happen. I don't know if it means by approving things like this, we have to include a portion of the homes have to be a certain size or not. And I'm not sure, it may be too late for this, I'm not sure, but moving forward, I'd be interested to research the options.
Okay. Thank you. Mr. Mosley.
I'll stand to be corrected by our community development director, but I think the proper forum for that conversation is the comp plan review, which is currently in process and certainly can be a part of the conversation that the council wants to have in reviewing the comprehensive plan. If you wanted to add an affordability section to the comprehensive plan, that would be the time to do it. Ben?
Absolutely. It is one of those things that we could beef up the comprehensive plans, and there's several different ways that jurisdictions deal with affordable housing, whether they want to make it mandatory or if you're just concerned about the actual size of the structure, the floor to area ratios that actually can restrict down the size of that structure overall, as opposed to just having that impervious surface where you're looking at the footprint of the house. Floor to area, you're looking at the entire first story, second story, possibly the third story that goes along with it, and so that kind of reduces the mass of that structure. That's another concern. So several tools that we could use.
Okay. Mr. Swanson, as an addition, you've gone out to RFP to rewrite the development regulations and also to adopt new zoning. That would also be an opportunity to look at things related to housing affordability. Correct me if I'm wrong. Okay.
Sure.
Okay, and also it would be an opportunity to look at things like townhouses and attached products and things like that. So the comp plan has increased the opportunity for density in different parts of our town, which are, you know, potential areas for redevelopment down here, you know, just north of West Main.
Sure.
And so part of that conversation is going to be seeing what other jurisdictions are doing for attached products, smaller lot product, and things along those lines, and that's part of what we're doing with the RFP and doing the development regulations. So.
Okay. Yeah. So no more comments on this. I will be later in the agenda. I will be bringing that forward to add to our agenda. I'll be looking for a second. Thank you.
Well, it's something we can certainly add to the agenda too.
Thank you.
Yeah. Yeah. You can do a second, and we can just add it to the agenda at the end too.
Yeah.
All right. Anything further on this? Is there a motion? Councilmember Kovac.
I'll make a motion. I believe I approve the Planning Commission's recommendation. It's consistent with the comp plan. Doesn't modify the intent of the existing regulations. Meets CEPA growth management. So I'm going to make a motion to set this first reading ordinance number 015/2017, amending the City of Monroe zoning map to change the designation in the Worthington Heights project area from urban residential 9600, UR 9600, to residential 4 dwellings per acre, R4, setting forth the supportive findings provided for severability and establishing an effective date.
Second.
Yeah, the first from Councilmember Cutaback, a second from Councilmember Davis, for the request of action as identified in Agenda Bill 17-01 as written. Any discussion on the motion? Seeing none, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed. Motion passes 6-0. Thank you. Okay, I'm sorry.
You abstained.
Okay, so 5-0-1 with the one being abstained from Councilmember Scarborough. Thank you. All right, next item on the agenda is final action number one. This is AD 17-102, ordinance number 016, 2017, approving Skyview final plat and PRD first and final reading. Ms. Moreno. Thank you.
Final plat
and residential development application for Skyview Ridge. Skyview Ridge is located off of 191st Avenue Southeast. It is a 42-lot plat PRD on 11.45 acres. The applicant is Rick Hansen of Hansen Homes. Access is off of 191st and a second access point through Eaglemont Division 4 when it is developed. Here's a location map of the site, two parcels. This is 191st, and it is adjacent to Eaglemont Division 3, which is currently under development, and Chainlink Road is on here. So this right here is going to be Eaglemont 4. And so the second access point is going to come from here through Eaglemont 4, and then connecting here. Here's a map of a final plat map of Skyview Ridge plat PRD. The preliminary plat PRD was approved by council on May 3rd, 2016, and the final plat PRD application was submitted on March 15, 2017. And this is the first. This is only part of the plat. This is 191st, so this is the westernmost part of the plat. And then on the next slide, it will be the remainder of Skyview Ridge. And then this is the connection here that will be to Eaglemont Division 4. The recommended action today for council is based on staff review, the final plat PRD application for Skyview Ridge conforms to the approved preliminary plat PRD and the Monroe Municipal Code. Per the City Council Rules of Procedure, Section 7.4, ordinances accepting final plat shall be read once before adoption. Ordinance number 016-2017 is presented for Council's consideration of adoption through this first and final reading. And if you have any questions, we can answer them for you.
Thank you. Mr. Bell, did you want to go through the disclosures?
No, Mr. Mayor. This is actually considered as an administrative approval process under state law rather than a quasi-judicial one, and for that reason, the appearance of fairness doctrine does not apply.
Okay, great. The council members. Councilor Bell, back.
Do you know when the Eaglemont 4 is scheduled to, because that would be the second point at which to be able to get in and out of that development?
So Eaglemont 4 has received preliminary approval, and they do have application in right now for grading. So I'm pretty sure it will happen the next couple months. We'll start breaking ground and putting in improvements.
Okay. So what's the time frame between, you think, when this is going to, is done and that, and Eaglemont 4 having that road connected? Like, is there a gap in between, or?
This will get recorded with the county. So after that point, I'm not sure what the developer has planned as far as when they, what we're going to get permits in with the city, but that permitting process still needs to take place before they can build any homes on the property.
Councilmember Scarborough,
could you go back to the big map, please? Okay. So currently, Eaglemont right now is just graded all this to connect with all of this, correct?
Yes.
Okay. So all of this is graded, and then this is the next project. There's 100 there. How many are in here?
115.
115?
Eagle Corps is 115.
And how many are in this? For all of the, it's already been drilled to.
Yeah, so this is 1, 2, and 3.
Yeah, so Eagle 1 had 63 lots, Eagle 2 had 46 lots, Eagle 3 had 36 lots.
And this one's going to have 100 more?
115.
Yeah, 115.
Oh, 115. And then 42 here.
So all of that's going to be done in the next year, is that safe to say?
They'll start building.
Are you building this one? I am not going to build the Skyview Ridge.
Okay.
But.
Yeah, so just to answer your question real quick about the road connection, so they do have a temporary road connection planned through this area right here. While they're building that area out. And so it's all the same builder, so they're slowly just working their way up along as the developments are approved. The timing on them, it would be a tough chore to build them all out next year. They may be able to get to do it, but they're going to be going hard.
We're still working 2 years away from 191st, is that correct? 2 years out for 191st, possibly?
Right, but there is still the connection for 197th goes up the Chain Lake Road, so there is a second exit out to Chain Lake Road.
And Steph, well, this is down here somewhere.
Staff will point out where the other means of ingress and egress is.
Go back to the office. Yeah, so basically this road right here goes out the Chain Lake Road.
Today,
it's open, you can drive there now.
Okay.
So all this has an exit out here, and then this one would connect across here, yeah. Be able to exit out there. And then when the four comes in, there'll be the road down out to 191st or back to here, and then up that way. So there'll be the two exits out.
Or down to the south.
And then down to the south outflows. I always do that when I play with this thing. I always destroy you. And then also,
where the laser pointer separate.
Yeah. When the Gilmartin plat here goes in, there'll be another connection from here out to Chain Lake Road. So, and that is in for review right now.
Yeah, all these pumps here are running 500 to 600,000, am I right?
Yeah.
Okay, for all of these homes across the way, here are going to be in the 500,000 to 600,000, and those are going to be in the 500,000 to 600,000, and these are going to be in the 500,000 to 600,000.
We don't have absolutes yet, but the way that things have been trending, it would probably be a pretty good guess that it's probably going to be in the 500,000 to 600,000.
So they're the same builders, so they're the same.
All of the Eagle One is the same builder, correct?
And it's kind of the same look, is that correct?
I assume that's what they're going to build, yes.
So the council member recognized that once these are final platted, even though you may think that it's going to continue being the same builder, there's always the possibility that, like happened in 2008, the economy can slow down, things can change, and the property could be sold to another company. So, you know, that's something else to recognize. You know, it is subject to what market conditions are at the time that lots are finaled. And
I understand. I'm not knocking the wood. I'm just wondering because they actually are very attractive homes, and I like them because they're a little different than everything else around. And I just wondered if that's what they were going to continue all the way over 190 and over there to Chain Lake Road. So you've answered my question.
Okay, cool.
Thank you.
All right, anything further from council members? Anything further from staff?
No.
Is there a motion or Councilmember Gamble?
Move to adopt ordinance number 06-2017, approving final
plat planned residential development for the Skyview Ridge subdivision, FLPPRD 2017-01, setting forth supportive findings, providing for severability, and fixing a time when the same shall become effective.
Second.
So a first from Councilmember Gamble, a second from Councilmember Cutback. The motion has identified the requested action in Agenda Bill Number 17-102 as written. Any discussion on the motion? Seeing none, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed? Any abstentions? Motion passes 6-0. Thank you very much. Let's move on to the next item on the agenda.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Next item on the agenda is Councilmember reports. We did not have a P4 committee this meeting, so this evening, so we'll go ahead and move down the line. Councilmember Gamble.
I don't think I have anything to report. It's just the end of the school year. Had a great Father's Day, and yeah, that's about school's out on Friday. That's all I know.
Thank you. Councilmember Davis.
Night, thank you.
Hey, Councilmember Rasmussen.
I attended the festivities, Father's Day festivities, and at Lake Tahoe on Saturday. It was a lot of fun. Weather held out, so it's a good time. Speaking of Lake Tahoe, and speaking of great weather this Saturday, once again, Charm Monroe is coming to Lake Tahoe. Be a lot of fun, great athletes. I didn't get the final call on how many athletes are coming this year, but I know it's at least 260 across the country and several different countries. We are still looking for additional volunteers, specifically course monitors, so if you guys are looking to do something fun in the sun, come join us.
And it will be sunny and warm on Saturday.
It will be.
I saw 81 degrees.
That's what the weather map says.
Yeah, 60 today, 81 on Saturday.
Yeah, just jinxed.
Yeah, I'm sorry. Any further, Councilmember Rasmussen? Thank you. Councilmember Coffey?
Nothing else to report. Great Father's Day.
Thank you. Councilmember Cutback.
I hope you all had a great Father's Day.
Thank you. Councilmember Scarborough.
Nothing to report.
All right, let's head out to staff. Mr. Wortham.
Nothing tonight, Mr. Mayor.
Okay. I'm not used to seeing you out there. Okay. Mr. Swanson.
Nothing.
Okay. Ms. Hazard.
Nothing tonight.
Okay. Mr. Falberg.
Nothing today.
Chief.
Absolutely nothing.
Okay. Mr. Mosley.
I just would point out that in your packet there is some information from Park and Rec. So, might want to look at that. Point out that they got 9 proposals for the Cadman site Tyee Park master plan. So they interviewed, I think, 3 firms. Is that correct? And I don't think the final has been selected yet, but very good response. The only other thing I would note is at the very end of their, they also provide information about their park work in terms of baggage and litter and that kind of thing, and that process continues to be on a downward trajectory. So I would just point that out. And I guess on a
downward being a good thing.
Downward being a very good thing. That's correct. Less litter.
That's right. Yeah.
And I guess Mayor, just I didn't want to say anything when the council was considering the appointment, but I haven't known Deborah personally in my travels as a city manager and hers as a city administrator, but I can tell you that within our club, and let me tell you, it is a club, she has a very, she's highly thought of in her work both in Woodinville and Sultan, which is kind of when I was a part of the club. So I commend you. I think commend the mayor and the council. I think you've made a great choice, and I think it's going to be a marriage made in heaven, and I compliment you on attracting someone of this quality.
Thank you.
Thank you.
And I, you didn't kick me under the table. I've forgot to have staff come forward to the community development update and also the Parks and Rec update. Do we have an update this evening?
Hey.
Okay.
Almost.
Yeah.
So as always, your monthly report is in your packet that outlines obviously last month of what we did, and along with the development map. You won't see anything that's really changed on this, pretty much the developments that were on last time. I just want to touch base on, I know we haven't really talked about Planning Commission, give you an update on that. So now with Commissioner Rousey on there, we are fully up to seven commissioners. Great group with varying ideas across the board, so the product that we get is always a good one because we have a lot of different input coming in. And we're just getting ready to go into our meeting next week where, as we talked about a little bit earlier, we have the comprehensive plan map, which is back there on the wall, and has identified the various zones and ranges for housing units in those zones, types of uses. And so we're going to start off that meeting next week with the Planning Commission and reviewing just some real high-level expectations of what they expect out of those zones. And that will give staff a chance to go back and do the data analysis. And it's a heavy, time-consuming process of making sure we can meet those 2035 numbers. And if we have the capacity to do it. And a lot of it gets even more complicated because you have wetlands and areas that aren't developable. So we're taking our best available knowledge that we have and trying to apply it to it to get it to as close as we can to that number. And again, kind of like Councilmember Gamble pointed out, we're a Growth Management Act city, and we have that obligation to take density here, as do all GMA cities. And that's why we have the county giving us our targeted growth rate. And on top of that, we're kind of in this unique core that the Puget Sound Regional Council is also involved. And that's where a lot of our transportation funds come from. And so we're also responsible to report to them with our growth targets and trying to meet those. And so that's a very important key. I know this is everybody thinks of a code update, largely to do with words and you can's and you can'ts. But the zoning maps actually, it's going to be very time consuming. We want to make sure we get it right. And so there'll be several iterations of going back and forth with Planning Commission, taking their data, plugging it back into our numbers, just seeing the numbers that we can generate out of it, get as close as we can with a realistic number to what we expect. And this not only includes just vacant land, it includes redevelopment too, which is really hard to forecast. You know, you're typically looking at large lots there with a single family home in usually a highly developed area, and is there a chance the developer is going to come in and buy like five of those large lots and then build like a higher density, you know, condos or townhomes or some form of attached housing along there. And so that's also an estimate, and those are typically weighed in a percentage or a factor where you assign the highly likelies to a 0.9 because nothing's 100%, and your redevelopment to a 0.5, so you slowly go down in these estimates. So that's going to be a huge undertaking in itself. So we do have our consultant interviews coming up, but we're getting started a little early just on this mapping process.
Any questions for Mr. Swanson? Mm-hmm. All right, let's go back to the Parks and Recreation update. Mr. Farrell's not here.
All right, which you just gave.
Yes.
We are good.
All right, so we're going to go ahead and talk a little bit about some of the things that I attended last week. I've got them described in Monroe this week. First, on Wednesday afternoon, I attended the Puget Sound Regional Council Economic Development District. As you're aware, I represent not just Monroe, but also the cities for Snohomish County on that district. One of the things that we have been working on for over the last year now is a strategy. It's a document that talks about how we're going to encourage economic development in our region. It's a four-county region. And upon releasing the document about 3 months, 4 months ago, a number of comments came in. The staff had been going through those comments and trying to get feedback from this Economic Development District Board, which consists of probably two dozen representatives. And it's a very big table and lots of folks around it. They were not able to, in a meeting where I was absent due to vacation, they were not able to take the staff comments
comments and give direction to staff. So at the meeting last week, the staff had a matrix and just wanted to go through the comments and get direction on coming back with a next iteration of the strategy. And so at the meeting last week, we were able to give them direction. With all that said, I'm hoping to have a new document out that I can forward to you sometime in July so you can take a look at where they're going with it. There are some folks that were on the district that wanted to see better metrics and things like that, and it appears that there's sort of a difference of opinion as to whether this is a broad strategy that you then come in with metrics later or a document that's supposed to have a lot of technical metrics in it. Just as an example of how technical some of this stuff gets, they talk about supporting things like a new stadium to replace Key Arena and things like that. There's a lot in there that is sort of Seattle-centric, and I've been a voice to make certain that cities like Monroe are part of this economic development strategy, and I'll be looking for the revisions to include more specifications, more specificity related to cities like ours. But the good news is the overarching goals now have cities like Monroe written into them. So we'll see how that comes around. On a more interesting and concrete note, because that was very broad, we had Mr. Feilberg and Mr. Mosley join me at Snohomish County on Thursday afternoon to meet with representatives from the Department of Transportation and also from Snohomish County Public Works to talk with them about the $750,000 that was approved in the 2017-2019 state transportation budget for State Route 522. As all of you know, $750,000 is a very small amount relative to the $150 million, I think, that it's going to take to finish the last two phases of 522. However, to go from zero to $750,000 is a big change. That's a big positive. So what we were doing last week was talking about how we want to invest that $750,000. And I think it's important for us to make certain that we are working with both the first legislative district, because the improvements are in that district, and Senator Palumbo, in addition to others, really pushed for funding in that district. So it's important for us to get work done on the Paradise Lake Road interchange and also doing things on the widening portion. So we were talking about trying to identify a project that we could do for part of the money that will have an immediate impact on improving transportation or traffic that is inbound from Woodinville to Monroe, and then doing design work on Paradise Lake Road. We're also talking about maybe doing the design work in such a way that we don't encumber all of the money, so that we might be able to leverage that for grants. As Councilmember Scarborough and I were talking earlier this evening about some of the projects we have here in our own city, we can take $33,000 and match that as a 15% match, and suddenly end up with a quarter of a million dollars to do a project. So if we're able to reserve out a couple $100,000, that can become $1.5 million or so, if I remember our conversation, but not doing the math, from Thursday last week. So what we did was just gave some rough parameters, and I was the only elected official there. I think it's important to hear from County Councilmember Lowe, from County Executive Summers, and also Senator Palumbo, to make certain that the prioritization that we agree upon is something that has their input, you know, that it's informed by their values too, not just mine and, you know, engineering and staff. So what I anticipate will happen is that in the early half of July, the staff will get back together and go over what they've determined based on our conversation from last week, and then we will have a conversation with the elected officials from the first legislative district and from the county to talk a little bit more about that prioritization. And I think that's it for now. Does anybody have any questions? Councilmember Cutabat.
So in the discussion of the widening, are was brought up what they have done on 405 with the shoulder driving, you know, with the X's that it can only be used during a certain time of the day, and are we looking at that for 522?
Not currently. Yeah, with $750,000, one of the things that we were talking about, again, it could end up being something completely different. For $250,000, they could do, for example, ramp metering at Echo Lake Fales Road. As you're aware, there are people that are inbound to Monroe that at Paradise Lake Road will turn left. They'll then parallel on U and come all the way around underneath 522 and then get back on 522. By metering that ramp, and the approximate cost for that is $250,000, it will save us an average of, was it 2 minutes?
The 2 or 4.
2 to 4 minutes inbound coming home in the PM peak hour commute. And based on how long it's going to take to get together more money to do the widening of 522 and the engineering, the permitting and everything, the staff at the table, at least just on Thursday, thought that there'd be value to the time savings with that. Doing those improvements, like the one-way lanes and everything, the DOT had some issues with doing that, and I think the costs were north of $250,000. So,
way north.
So that was one of the conversations we were having.
So you're saying that people get off 522 and get back on?
Yes.
And so they do that move to cut back all that traffic going over kind of the...
Yeah, so inbound, so...
Are there signs up there that say only exit to exit?
No.
Like they did that on 405, people did that on the Kirkland, they would get off, pretend to go in the Kirkland and get back on 405 to miss the wide, and they put up signs there. They didn't meter the ramp, but they put up signs that said...
They can't
do it.
Yeah.
I don't know.
I think that we can certainly bring that up to them. There may be an argument that that requires an enforcement where you've got to track whether or not somebody's doing that. We can certainly bring it up to them. Yeah. Any other questions? Councilmember Gamble?
We can't do that because I get off and then I get back on. And I don't feel guilty about it.
It's not illegal.
The state doesn't fix their problem.
There's nothing illegal.
There's nothing illegal about it.
And the ramp metering, what that'll do. What ramp metering will do is it'll back up Councilmember Gamble as he's getting back on. The interesting thing is your GPS, like I use Waze,
yep.
it will actually tell you to turn left. It
tells you to get off.
Yeah, and then get back on.
So,
you saw that before.
No signs.
Councilmember Scarborough.
It doesn't stop you from coming across 196 from Highway 9 to Malby to go U Way,
yeah.
Which is what most anybody who drives it all knows to do.
Yeah.
And then the second is, if you read the article on the lawsuit pending, it may have some bearing on 522 being fixed or putting it higher up on a priority. We also remember I'm talking about in dedicated longer left-hand turn lane off 522 on the Maltby Road.
Yeah, and at Paradise Lake. We talked about that also, yes.
Yeah. So.
So we'll keep moving the ball closer to the goalposts, and thank you all very much. I also attended the Father's Day event on Saturday, and also learned that the Route 2 Taproom is bringing in muscle cars and older cars and things like that, I think on a weekly basis. So, Route 2 Taproom. Yeah, so you might swing by and check that out one of these Saturdays. And I think that's the extent of what I have to brief you on today. So let's go ahead and go to the extended agenda. We did have a request from Councilmember Hanford to add to the extended agenda a discussion on affordable housing. Councilmember Hanford, would you like to give a little bit more detail on what you're looking for with that topic?
Sure. There's two different tracks. Number one, there's the track of apartment type buildings, housing hope, for example. But then there's also the track of, okay, if we're going to put in 100 homes, we're going to allow 100 homes to be built in this area. But if we were to write into our codes that for every so many homes built at whatever the max square feet is, a certain portion of those have to be built smaller, which then would increase the amount of affordability in our city. Right? What we're seeing week after week, year after year, we approve these huge lot things and we say, yeah, go build them. And they build $500,000 to $600,000 homes. And the amount of people that can afford to buy those is going down. And with the housing crisis in the greater Seattle area, everyone's coming out here. That's, you know, we can't stop that. But I feel like we can do something more than the rubber stamp that we just seems like we keep putting on these developments. So those are the two different tracks I'd love to explore. Sounds like Ben's got some.
So when we do this on Thursday, staff will go ahead and update me on some options we can do in terms of topic. The other thing, too, is an acknowledgement that they're working on the update to the development regulations at this time also. So it may be that some of these comments could be folded into the development regulation update, and then some of the comments also might require changes to the comp plan. And so if we're moving into the comp plan cycle, you know, the update for the comp plan. Hey, is there a deadline date for this cycle's comp plan update?
Yep. First Citizens is the end of July, yep. But it's silent on city amendments. But regardless, we have to do it all in one shot.
Yep.
Okay. And when is that going forward to Planning Commission?
This year's cycle is going in July.
Okay.
So we'll be finishing that up, and then next year's cycle, it just depends on how many we get in.
Okay. So if we were to have a conversation in council on July 11th, would that be too late to fit something in for the comp plan?
Okay.
So what we'll do is we'll put a placeholder on there for affordable housing discussion on July 11th. And does that sound reasonable?
Ben, could that be in this year's comp plan thing?
That would come over in 2018.
Oh, 2018.
Yeah, so just the docketing ends in July.
Oh.
Yeah, so that would carry over for next year. We're doing the 2017 Planning Commission in July, so that's for last year to docket essentially in July. And then we, you know, obviously analyze cumulative analysis that we're required for the comp plan updates, and then move forward with that. And again, I mean, we can check the comp plan, and we may be able to get by with what we have, and may need a little beefing up. But I know we have affordable housing elements in there, but I can take a look before the next meeting on also.
Okay, so let's do this. We'll slate it for July 11th, if that's okay with you.
Sure.
To come back and give a report on what our current comp plan provides for and what options there would be for the development regulation update, and what else, what other changes could be made for the 18 cycle then. And
so, Mayor, that would be a discussion item?
Discussion item, yeah.
Gotcha.
So a presentation from staff and a discussion item.
Thank you. Just to be clear, I mean, this isn't just my concern. I hear so often they're building 3,000 square foot homes that I can't afford. If they built a 1,500 or 1,800 square foot home, I could probably afford it. But so, thank you.
Great point. Anything else? Go ahead and go over the next week's agenda and the extended.
Business meeting on June 27th. There are several presentations, proclamations, presentation from the police department on recognition of service, proclamation on Park and Rec Month, proclamation on Speed Week 2017, and presentation by the Snohomish Health District. And new business items would be the marijuana-related uses, first reading, and authorizing the Mayor Pro Tem to sign the 2017 Fair Traffic Agreement. Fair being F-A-I-R, as in the... Well, I'm sure you all know that. So we will add to the 27th... No, I'm sorry, onto the... July 11th discussion of the affordable housing. And just to remind you, meeting on July 4th is canceled, and so after next week, our next council meeting will be July 11th.
Quick question on the presentation for Snohomish Health District. What is the topic on this? It seems like they're here fairly recently.
It wasn't that long ago that we had an actual presentation from them. So do we know if there's anything new?
I don't know.
Liz, did you or
I believe that they just wanted to come back out and talk about where they were at with Monroe Services. I didn't get much other detail than that, but I can certainly follow up when I remind them of their presentation.
Yeah, it would be helpful if it's the same presentation as before, but we had a presentation like this about 3 weeks ago, yeah, it might have been a month ago. If it's the same presentation or similar to before, then maybe there needs to be another passage of time, another couple months or so.
Mm-hmm.
In our last board meeting, it sounded like it wasn't going to be tough call once they had it. I just have rolled out. I could be wrong though.
So let's reach out to them and see if they've got anything new to report. So, Council, it may be that the fourth item in the presentation from the Health District may be removed if there isn't maybe timely information to be presented. And as far as people being absent, we show that. Just please make certain that everything is updated there, I guess.
Gamble and Scarborough.
Gamble and Scarborough are both out next week.
Okay.
There is no further business needed this evening. Motion.
Motion to
adjourn. Who was the first on that? Councilmember Rasmussen, the second, Councilmember Davis.
Thank you,
seeing none, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
W2 for that or
motion passes 6-0. Thank you.
Yeah.